The makers of Supercell gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is the world's outstanding entertainer, Al Jolson, with an all-star bill of famous guest stars. We switch you now to Shell Chateau, where you'll be greeted by Al Jolson.
Good evening, friends. Your name somehow I can't recall right now, but know you all I bow. Good evening, friends. Monsieur Teflon, one time Madame, Monsieur Berry, one shot Terry. I'm a talibu, wave, wave, wave. I know you all I do. Good evening, friends. Pull up the chair and turn the lights down low. You let out shell chateau. Good evening, friends. We're on the air just once a week, you know. Each week a brand new show for you, my friend. The music starts, the curtain parts, and all apart for everyone. Although it's true that I cannot see you, I almost feel I do. Good evening, friends.
Thank you, folks, thank you. And once again, I welcome you to Shell Chateau, where each Saturday night, we bring you an hour of Super Vaudeville, the greatest stars in the entertainment world. Just listen, and I'll tell you who is here tonight. For music, we have Victor Young and his officer. And tonight, Victor is so proud of his officer. And why shouldn't he be? All the boys are dressed up in the latest tuxedo suits. They're Cinderella suits. They must be back by 12. Wait a minute, you ain't heard nothing yet. For song, we have Miss Estelle Taylor, one of the most charming stars of the stage and screen. You, of course, know that Miss Taylor's great opposite most of our great leading men. So I asked her. I said, Miss Taylor, who do you think in your estimation is the greatest lover on the screen? And she said, well, Al, frankly, it's hard to say. But when it comes to making love, all men are like automobiles. They all use the same clutch. From the sports world, we have Alan Dutra, the professional golf champion of 1934 and winner of many golf trophies. And speaking of golf, last Sunday I played with Victor Young. What a golfer he is. He took a terrific swing at the ball, and listen, he ripped his trousers. He turned around to me and he said, listen, Al, is it a big rip? I said, if it was any bigger, you'd be open champion. Wait, and from the dramatic field, we have that glamorous star of the screen, Miss Betty Davis. And it's remarkable how Miss Davis keeps a slender figure. She tells me from dieting. Say, I know a woman who wanted to lose weight, so she went on a vegetable diet. The first week, she ate nothing but lettuce and tomatoes, and she lost 5 pounds. The second week, she ate nothing but carrots and peas, and she lost 10 pounds. The third week, she ate nothing but onions and garlic, and she lost her husband. Now comes the piece that is his song. For comedy, we have George Ethel, that very great comedian, and I might add that George is one of the finest after-dinner speakers in America today. As George himself would tell you, he has made so many speeches that all you have to do is show him half a grapefruit, and he gets up and talks. Well, when he came to Shell Chateau this afternoon, I wanted to have a little talk with George. For old time's sake, I have known him for years. So we went to a restaurant here in the neighborhood, and we had a sandwich and a cup of coffee. And was I embarrassed? I felt in my pocket, and I realized I had no money with me. Of course, I didn't want George to pay for it. I wasn't trying to outfumble him. I really didn't have any money. So I explained to the cashier. He said, if you have no money with you, don't worry. It's all right. I'll just write your name on the wall. And I said, listen, I wouldn't want people to see my name on the wall. He said, don't worry, they won't. Your coat will be hanging on it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a little song that is fast becoming the hit of the season. A song from that grand picture, Broadway Gondolier, sung so marvelously by Dick Powell, The Rose in Her Hair. Hit it, Victor.
Love is a rose, and it grows like a rose. I found a rose nestled in someone's hair. Sweet was the rose. And never a maid was so fair. In her eyes there was moonlight and a rose in her hair. In my arms there was no one, so I just put her there. On her lips was a promise, in my heart was a prayer. When I finally went, I went home with a scent of the rose in her hair. Love was in bloom, in the gloom of the night. Bright was the moon on the night we were there. Love was in bloom, and so was the rose in her hair.
In her eyes there was moonlight and a rose in her hair. In my arms there was no one, so I just put her there. Her lips was a promise, in my heart was a prayer. When I finally went, I went home with a scent of the rose in her hair.
Our first guest this evening is a champion. Ladies and gentlemen, and what a champion. His name, Alan Dutra, and he's one of the biggest men that ever reached the top in the ancient game of golf. He won the United States Open Championship last year, and just a couple of weeks ago, he made a world record in golf, which will stand for years. Honestly, you really ought to see the way that man can smack that little spheroid of gutta percha. To you folks who've never been to Harvard, Princeton, or B'nai B'rith, gutta percha spheroid is nothing more than a golf ball. And here is the golf ball expert himself, Alan Dutra. Alan, it certainly is great having you here.
I'm glad to be here, Al. Makes a nice change from whacking a ball around the golf course these hot days.
These hot days, baloney. Hot days are cold days. You're so crazy about golf, listen, you couldn't help but blame. But tell me this. I read in the papers about that world record you made out in Santa Monica a few weeks ago. What papers? Say, who believes things in papers? I want to hear it from your own lips. What tournament was it?
It was the Santa Monica Midsummer Open Championship. And they really had a lot of darn good players in it. For some reason, I just happened to get the hot the first day, and it seemed like I just couldn't do anything wrong. So the first round, I took a 64.
64 for 18 holes? Say, what is par for the course?
71.
7 under par for the first 18. Right. I'll bet you couldn't keep up that pace.
No. The next round, I took a 66. And the round after that, I got another 66.
5 under par for the second and third round?
Right.
Go on.
The last round, I got a 70.
Shot at 70. Well, that's what I call going to pieces. Came in 1 under par. Alan, you talk about your 64 and your 66. I was pretty hot playing golf last week myself. I was playing out to Hillcrest, and I shot, believe it or not, a 63.
A 63?
Yeah, but on the second nine was I rotten. Listen, Alan, when a man shoots 266 for 72 holes, that's golf. What was the old record?
Up to then, 267 was the lowest score that had ever been made for 72 holes of competitive golf on a course more than 6,000 yards long.
I give up. You must come over and play with me sometime, Dolan.
I'd love to, Al. I give lessons, you know.
Wait a minute. On this program, all we do is sell gas.
Oh, I see.
I know you're a great pro, Dolan, but tell me, did you ever play as an amateur?
I only played once as an amateur, Al. A Memorial Day tournament at Del Monte in 1924.
At Del Monte in 1924.
That's right.
And did you win?
Yeah, I won. And right after that, I turned professional.
Say, I want to know something. You know, everybody's got to learn. Where did you learn how to play golf?
When I was 10 years old, I started caddying at Del Monte.
Yeah.
And I kept it up until I was 14.
I see. Then you really learned to play on the Del Monte course while you were a caddy, huh?
No, I didn't, Al. You see, nowadays we let our caddies play around the course in the morning. But in those days, the caddies were strictly forbidden to play on the club course. Of course, there weren't any driving ranges or anything like that in those days either. So where I learned to play golf was in a hayfield.
A hayfield?
That's right.
Well, worth it. I'd like to learn how to play there myself.
Would you?
Well, listen, from starting to play in a hayfield, you surely have become a great golfer. But tell me something. Since you became pro and played in all these tournaments, what would you say was the biggest thrill you ever had?
Well, Al, I guess the biggest thrill was when I won the National Open in Philadelphia in 1934.
Come on, big boy, tell us about it.
You know, the funny thing about that tournament was I was so sick when I got to Philadelphia, I didn't think I'd be able to play.
What was the matter?
I got sick on the train going east, and I actually lost 18 pounds between Los Angeles and Philadelphia.
18 pounds?
That's right.
Gee whiz, I don't see how you could even play.
Well, believe me, I had to take it very easy. And when I went out for that last round, I was all in. Lawson Little, who just won the British Amateur, was playing with me. And he literally had to carry me the last few holes.
Gee.
When I stepped up to the tee on the 18th, I needed a 5 to win.
Yeah?
Well, the last hole in the course is a long 4-par hole, about 445 yards long. But it's awfully to get into trouble. You have to drive right over a stone quarry off the tee. If your ball doesn't carry better than 200 yards, you're ruined, and I mean you're ruined. Well, I cleared the quarry, and then Lawson Little absolutely dragged me up the slope to where my ball was lying. Gee, Al, a cold sweat comes over me when I think of it. At the end of the fairway, I could see cameras, sound trucks, thousands and thousands of people. Well, I walked up to my ball, and I thought of my wife and kids back home listening to the match on the radio.
Oh.
And I knew I had to relax. So I lit a cigarette, walked around the ball a couple of times until I felt a little better. Then I took out that good old spoon I've had for 10 years and hit the ball.
Go on.
Well, sir, she sailed right down the middle of the course and landed on the green.
Don't stop bowling. Come on, sink that putt. Sink that putt.
No, I didn't sink that one, Al. You see, I was 40 feet from the pin, and I could afford to be careful. I putted it within 6 feet of the cup. Then I took another very careful putt, which stopped just an inch from the lip. And then I tapped it in.
What a round. Gee whiz. Say, listen, what's the next tournament you're going to enter? I'm going to see it.
Well, the match I'm training for now isn't exactly a tournament. You see, I'm going east in September as a member of the American Ryder Cup team to play against England at Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Say, do you think we'll win the Ryder Cup matches this year?
It's hard to say, Al. But all of us are going in there to try. There have only been 4 Ryder Cup matches since the cup was donated by Mr. Ryder. And the English have won 2 of them, and we've won 2 of them. We lost in 1933 by half a point, and I hope this year we can nose them out.
I hope so, too. And I know all the folks here in Shell Chateau, and in fact, all of the United States will join in wishing you all kinds of luck next month at Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Thank you, Al.
Now, how to make your money go farther?
Out of every dollar you spend for gasoline, 80 cents goes for driving around your own neighborhood. Here's why. 4 out of every 5 miles you drive are on short trips to the store, movie, bank, church, pub, and to see friends. It's stop-and-go driving, the kind of driving that wastes money, unless you're using gasoline made with your requirements in mind. You can now get such gasoline if you ask for Super Chef, the first truly balanced gasoline. It gives you the 3 kinds of power you need in perfect balance. Power for quick starting, power for accelerating and hard pulling, and power for steady driving. By using Super Shell, you cut down the usual waste on everyday driving. You can save as much as a cupful of gasoline every time you start and warm up the engine. You save up to another cupful on 10 minutes of rapid accelerating. And since you often start your car 10 times a day and accelerate to shift gears as many as 60 times a day, these cupfuls you save soon mount up into gallons. You know about how often you have to buy gasoline. Well, next time get Super Shell. Then just notice how much farther that tankful of Super Shell goes. How much longer it is before you need to buy gas again.
Now I'm going to bring you our 2 kids, Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner. And boy, what a time they had last Sunday. They went over to Catalina Island to go fishing. Well, sir, they were trolling from a little motorboat, and all of a sudden Jack got an enormous swordfish on his line. He fought him for about an hour, and when he finally got him alongside, he hollered to Peggy, "Give it to Gab." Well, Peggy doesn't know much about fishing, and she thought he said, "Give it to Gab." So she pulled the throttle, the boat shot away, and, well, Jack lost his swordfish. Of course, I know a lot of fellas who would throw their wives out of a boat if they did that. But say, listen, I don't want to be giving you people any ideas. But Jack forgave her. Of course, that's sweet. Why? Well, they're in love. And now they're going to sing through the doorway of dreams. From the big broadcast of 1935, Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner.
About actors, how well they're doing. I read it myself only 2 or 3 months ago. Jessel, there's a lucky fella. He married a rich actress and bought a diamond ring for $10,000. Who had that kind of money? I bought a little ring and I'm taking care of it as I go along. That's all. I read about a week ago here in the paper. It says Jessel has finally landed himself a fine job at Hollywood. He's an executive at one of the larger motion picture studios. It's a little exaggerated, the executive. I got a little job and an office. They didn't give me anything yet. After 3 months, I'll get an office. And after 3 months, my contract is over, so you can't figure on anything. You know what I mean? But I have had a most interesting time here in California. I came here originally to play a week's engagement at one of the theaters downtown. No need to mention the name, because why should the Shell Company advertise the Paramount? However, it was the most interesting engagement, as I said. I went down there, and of course the advertising sort of disturbed me for a moment. As I came in on the marquee above the theater, it said, "This week, Georgie Jessel, next week, less miserable." But it was really very, very nice and interesting, because we played 6 shows a day. And finally, after 2 or 3 days, I got all mixed up, you know what I mean? I started to be like that girl in the picture. You possibly saw the motion picture Private World.
Well, the girl is a little bit, you know, when she comes in and she says,
I'm Carrie Flint, I've come to tea. I'm Carrie Flint, I've come to tea, you know? That's how I felt with the six shows. I'm Georgie Jessel, I'm on again. I'm George Jessel, I'm on again, you know? We had a splendid time, though, and I was kept over for, well, they extended the engagement for the second week. They announced it that way. I had the contract for 2 weeks originally, but the second week we had a grand time. We had 300 children, a kiddie show. 300 children and 1,200 mothers. I never saw so many relations in my life, you know? And kids all over. You come to the dressing room, open up a can of cold cream, three children jumped out, you know? But it was interesting talking to the children, children of all different nationalities, you know, and all kinds. I got to talking to a couple of the Jewish children for their novelty of the thing. And, well, it is a novelty because the children out here, I find, are named differently than most of the same type of children that we have in the East, you know, where I live in New York. I mean, most of the kids are named after their biblical forefathers. Here, it's a little bit different. I said to one child, what's your name, son? He said, Sinclair is my name. Sinclair Rosenberg is my name. And this is my boyfriend, DeWitt Clinton Sink. So, I got friendly with all the youngsters, and one afternoon following one of the performances, I was in the dressing room, two little fellas in there, and the mothers of one of these children was calling him, say, Cornelius. But Cornelius evidently didn't hear his mother. Another kid had to nudge him, say, Stunk, your mama wants you. But really, the theaters out here, I mean, are different, as I say, from the ones we have in New York. I played an engagement at the theater on Broadway some months ago, a motion picture theater. They begin at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, what kind of customers are you going to get at 9 o'clock in the morning? Well, so you come out, you look through the wings, and the entire audience consists of traveling salesmen. You know what I mean? They've been up about an hour. They couldn't sell anything. They come in the theater, put their samples under the seat, and make faces at the actors all afternoon. It hurts them because we're working. You know what I mean? Then about 12 o'clock, the ladies come. Of course, the ladies, they don't come either to see the picture or the play. Their main object in life is to save a seat for a friend. That's all they care. And that procedure is followed in this manner. The lady generally comes with her husband's hat. That's the idea, huh? Puts the hat on the seat to her right or left, and you come in, you want to sit down. Well, but my husband, he'll be back in a minute, huh? But it's interesting, and it's good for an actor to play that type of theater, particularly in these drastic days of the drama. Because you play four or five or maybe six times a day, and it keeps you mentally alert. You've got to think of new jokes at every performance, because you're working for the same people all day. I have an aunt who is one of that type of theater favorites. She goes in, and once she's in, she stays the whole season. You know what I mean? And it's a remarkable thing about her, as it happens. I mean, I say this with no ulterior motive, because I got the job, but I mean, she is the most ardent Jolson fan. Remembers all his plays and his pictures and listens to his programs, but, and loves his songs, but has no idea about committing a melody to her brain. You know, there are some people that, for instance, I dined at this aunt's house, and she was characteristically humming a song to herself, you know? Cocktails for two. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this time, a popular song called It's Easy to Remember, but So Hard to Forget. Victor, just a more note of instruction. I mean, make out I'm not singing. Just make out it's Bill Al and play it, you know, his way. Go ahead, if you please. With you, I own the earth. With you, I rule creation. Know you, and what's it worth? Life is just an imitation. That sweet expression I see before me, the way you look when we met, it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. I hear you whisper, I'll always love you. I know it's over, and yet
I feel your arms caress me, fingers press me tight.
I'd rather dream than have that lonely feeling stealing through the night.
That one clear moment is there before me, and though it brings me regret, it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget.
I love this song. I tell you why. It's got a nice, sentimental, old-fashioned sway to it. The kind of song that I used to sing when I was a little fellow. It's got that. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, in those days, the songs had ever so much more sentiment and deep feeling than the ones they're writing today. I don't know if you sang a love song, by gosh, you knew it was a love song by title. I can't tell why I love you, but I do. I'll be with you when the roses bloom again. Will you love me in December as you do in May? Love song. Today, the love songs are, I want to go back to Chakamahakama, Hawaii. Two cigarettes in the dark, and I'm out in the cold again. Looka, looka, looky, here comes Cookie. Songs have so much heart, so much feeling. Well, of course, nearly everything seems to have changed since I was a little fella. Even the kids are different. Children haven't got that same sweet, childlike simplicity they used to have. A kid is born, it leaves its cradle, and it's a grown-up before you know it. It forgets the springtime of its youth almost immediately. I remember around Christmas time, say to some little fella, well, sonny boy, soon the Christmas will be here, and then what do you want Santa Claus to put in your stocking on Christmas morning? And the child would wistfully answer, well, sir, a toy drum, a soldier coat, a baseball glove, some sweet childish fancy. I got a nephew, 6 years old. I said to him this Christmas, well, sonny, what do you want Santa Claus to put in your stocking? He says, Joan Blondell. Santa
Georgia, and I hope your 3 months at the Fox studio become 3 years. And if you're a lucky fella, they might change your name, you know what I mean, in front of the studio to J. Throckmorton, Vanek, Sheehan, Skank, Jessel. I hope you folks remember a couple of weeks ago, I sang a song of Paul Dresser's called My Gal Sal.
And a beautiful song it was, too.
At that time, I said I thought Paul Dresser's name would live forever because of that one song. Tonight, I would like to sing a song written by another American composer who will never be forgotten. His name is Ethelbert Nevin. And I don't think I'll have to tell you the name of the song, but I might as well so Victor can play it. Mighty Like a Rose.
Sweetest little fella. Everybody knows, don't know what to call him, but he's mighty like a rose. Looking at his mani with eyes so shiny blue, make you think that heaven is a calling. When he's a dar asleep in his little place, beneath I see the angels looking through the lace. When the dark is falling, when the shadows creep, then they come on tiptoe to kiss him in his sleep. Sweetest little fella, can you think that a heaven is a coming close to you?
About housekeepers and gasoline. What is your idea of a good housekeeper? It's not a woman who is a good cook, or merely a good cleaner, or can only furnish a house nicely. No. A good housekeeper is a woman who can do all these things well. Now, it's the same way with gasoline. It's not enough for a gasoline to merely start quickly, or pull up hills, or just be good for long, steady driving. If your gasoline does not give you all three of these different kinds of power, it's wasting your money. You see, 80% of your driving is stop and go. Short trips around town, stopping for red lights or inching along in heavy traffic. Well, there is now a gasoline specially adapted to this stop and go driving we all do. It's Super Shell. It's the first truly balanced gasoline. It gives you the three kinds of power you need in just the right proportion.
This is Shell Al Jolson, folks. We're back in Shell Chateau, and the show is going on. Tonight we have George Jessel, Estelle Taylor, Alan Dutra, Betty Davis. And last but not least, Victor Young and his music. Tonight Victor is going to play a medley of tunes. But before we hear him, I want you folks to know that Victor isn't feeling so well this evening. Last night, Victor got a terrible shock from an electric light bulb. He turned it on and found his sweetheart kissing another fella. Anyway, tonight he plays a medley of tunes in honor of Bing Crosby's birthday, which fell on the 3rd of May. As usual, Victor is late. But the medley is really swell and has all the great tunes from Bing's greatest pictures. Shut out, you sleepyhead. voice, a lovely face, a lovely figure. Her name is Estelle Taylor. She's just been signed to play opposite James Cagney in the Frisco Kid. And tonight she's going to sing for us right here in Shell Chateau. Miss Estelle Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Would you like me to tell the folks about the song you're going to do?
Oh, I'd like to tell them now. I'm going to sing a song called Solitude. And I hope the people here in Shell Chateau would like me singing that song half as much as I have enjoyed Mr. Joseph.
I'll bet you tell that to all the boys. All right, Victor, play it. Tonight, I want to compliment you on two things. First, I love your song. Second, I want to compliment you on that outfit you're wearing. It's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Joseph.
You understand, I've known you a long time, and it's the most remarkable thing how you always manage to wear the right thing at the right time. You're always in style.
I want to thank you again. You know, I always try to dress for each occasion. But you'd be surprised how difficult it's becoming. You know, with a child's style changing so much.
Well, only yesterday I read that 100 years from now, women won't be wearing anything at all. And believe me, it worries me.
Why should it worry you? You won't live to see it.
That's what worries me. Present one of Hollywood's most brilliant young actresses. She's made many fine pictures, and last year, both the critics and the public hailed her magnificent performance of Human Bondage as a masterpiece. Our latest picture is Front Page Woman, and we'd like to present her in a scene from this new picture, but the fact is, the picture is such a marvelous surprise finish, we couldn't do the best scene from it without giving the picture away. So tonight, Ms. Davis is going to show her versatility by presenting a scene from a very famous play by A.E. Thomas called Just Suppose, with Crawford Kent as Lord Carnaby and John Wood as Kit, the Prince. And now I want to introduce Miss Betty Davis. Just Suppose is a story of a girl and a prince. The girl is an American, the daughter of an old Virginia family. The prince might be the Prince of Wales, but of course he really isn't. The prince visiting America has met Miss Linda Lee Stafford and has fallen in love with her. But Linda Lee knows that they can never marry, so she runs away. And the prince sails away on a battleship. A month later, Linda's alone in the garden of her home when she hears someone at the gate. She looks up and is astonished to see Lord Carnaby, the prince's unofficial guardian.
Lord Carnaby? Is this a ghost?
No, my dear child, it's an ambassador.
But I thought I read...
Yes, I know. You fought me hundreds of miles at sea. Your American newspapers are so very unreliable.
You bring me some message from Kit?
Yes, my dear, I do.
Well, sir. Well?
I'm sorry, Miss Chatter, but I fear I must appear to you as a highly inconsistent old man. However, it was Gladstone, I believe, who described consistency as the bugbear of little minds. Oh, wasn't it, Gladstone?
Would you think it crudely American of me if I asked you to come to the point?
Miss Stafford, when I last saw you, I begged you not to see the prince.
How could I help but remember?
Now I have the honor to ask you to forget that I ever made that request.
Lord Carnaby.
I beg you to see him again.
Oh, you can't mean this.
Yes, my dear. I do mean just that.
Well, I don't understand.
Well, this, then, is what happened. Expecting to see you again, he goes away quite happy. And then, silence on your part. Disappearance. A conviction on his part of some hideous misunderstanding. He implored me to keep the ship within touch for a day or two, and so we altered our course. Southward. Then came a message from Shipley. You have been found, and were on your way home. And so, dear lady, here we are.
But why? Why?
Because the Virginia girl was coming home again. Because he couldn't bear to leave her forever in the shadow of misunderstanding. And because his grief at such a prospect was so poignant, so vivid, that it touched even the withered heart of the aged professional liar who now speaks to you. 10 minutes. That's all, dear. 10.
I don't think that... Well, I don't think that I can bear it.
Can you bear it to send him away?
I know, I...
Oh, my dear, I know. I'm only a gray old warhorse, crippled and scarred and worn, but I know the pangs that youth can feel. Yes, I know them. And now, my dear, I can say no more. Will you see?
Where is he?
Waiting. There.
Send him to me.
Thank you. Thank you. But if I may ask...
No, Lord Carnaby. There ought to be no but this time. I closed the book once. You've opened it again. In it I must read what's written.
But, Miss Shepherd, there is something I now feel it necessary to confide to you. Something even His Highness doesn't know. Because we feel it should be kept from him.
Yes, Lord Conway.
The prince's father. Gravely ill.
The king, no. Oh, my poor, poor kid.
He doesn't know. But he must be prepared for
anything. I understand. And thank you for your confidence. Lord Carnaby, I may never see you again. But if so, I should like you to remember that I did what I could and that it wasn't very easy.
My dear child, I've lived a long, eventful life. Countless of the men and women I've known, and I dare say as I grow old and still, I shall forget most of them. But not you, my dear. Not you. Just wait here a moment. Linda.
Kit, darling.
I couldn't go. I couldn't.
Oh, I'm afraid you shouldn't be here.
Why didn't you write? Why didn't you send me a message? I don't see how you could do it.
Don't you?
No, I don't.
You're not very clever, are you? Can't you see that I couldn't bear to say goodbye to you? And now it seems that I've got to do it after all.
Yes. But I've done a lot of thinking since I saw you last. And I've made up my mind I was wrong.
Wrong?
Yes, wrong. It's just this. I can't go out of your life. I simply can't bring myself to do it without saying, oh, you know it well enough. But for once in my life, futile as it is, I'm going to say to the girl I love, just like any other man, my darling, I love you.
Please.
You mustn't let it hurt you. Just let me tell you. At midnight, I fail. And all Europe is going to be empty because you're not there. Dear, don't be angry.
Do I look angry? Oh, kiss. Kiss me.
You care. You care, my darling.
I'm the girl who cried to the moon and got it.
Never to see you. Never to hear your voice or take you in my arms again. All my life. How can I do it? How can I?
You can do what you must.
Has it ever occurred to you that I can quit the whole thing?
Quit?
Yes, chuck it. Chuck the whole business, bag and bag.
Oh, darling, you can't.
I shouldn't be the first, and I dare say not the last. Before heaven, I will if you'll stand by me.
I don't say such things, kid.
Why not? After all, what's it worth? Not one hair of your blessed head.
Sweetheart, you're dreaming.
My dearest, I want you. Just you. Spend my whole life long with you. Oh, my dearest, let me do it.
Poor dear kid.
You game?
Game?
Yes, game. Game for the loveliest adventure in history. A tale the world will tell 100 years from now.
Listen to me.
Marry me tonight.
Oh, but kid, you...
I mean it. It's not very late. Surely we can find some parson to say those little words. Do you, George Chester, take Linda Lee Sasser to be your lawful wedded wife? I do. Do you, Linda, take... I do. And there you are. What can they do about it?
Kit, this is all wild talk.
If you loved me as I love you, you wouldn't think twice. You'd say as I do. The devil take the world if I may have my love.
Wait, it's just because I do love you as I like to think few men have ever been loved before. You are right in one respect. It'd be so easy and so wonderful. So easy. And then... Well, just as all had been won, we should find that all was lost.
Well lost.
Oh, not the things that we should lose.
Linda.
Darling, it's so hard. And my heart cries, yes, yes, with every beat. And my head cries, no, no, no. And I know my head is right. Oh, I'm not very old and I'm not very wise, but I know one thing, and it's this. Love is big, but life is bigger still.
My love and my life are one.
Dear kid, if I weren't so sure in my heart that you're going to be a strong man, doing the work that only you can do, carrying burdens that no one else can bear, reflecting honor upon your country and your blood, if I weren't so sure of this, I might say yes.
Do, my dearest, do.
I can't. For I see all too clearly what would happen then. For you to do this thing would be the act of a man who is... turned his back upon his honor, betrayed his country and sold his people. Poor woman. That's what the world would see.
Blast the world.
Ah, yes, but I should think so, too.
Linda.
And shouldn't I be right? Ah, yes, in your heart you know it. And then, well, how could I go on loving you as I do? A man who would fail his country, his race. Yes, and in failing that, would fail me, too. And oh, Kit, darling. It'd kill me if I could not love you.
Then it comes to this. I must choose between you and your love.
That's what it comes to.
That's a bitter choice.
Oh, kid, won't you help me a little? You think it's easy for me? Here's my heart going throb, throb, throb. All my life long it'll go like that. And with every throb it'll say one word to me. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Until at last it stops and yet the man I love is the man I must reverence. The man who can trample himself. Yes, and me too. Beneath his feet. For his honor.
Wonderful thing.
I know. Only a girl who was fighting to keep the most precious thing in her life. Her love for the man who loves her.
I don't admit you're right. Somehow I can't see it. But whatever you tell me to do, I'll do it. Now and always.
Kid, I love you. And now, before you go, for you must go soon, I want to give you something. Something for you to remember me by. That we may share together all our lives long. Just you over there and me over here. You remember this ring?
Yes.
I told you it belonged to my own dear mother. I want you to take it, please, and keep it in remembrance of me.
Until I die.
I'm afraid it won't compare favorably with the crown jewels, but it's the best I have.
Oh, my darling, my darling.
Please, please, I'm afraid I can't stand very much more.
Am I never to hear from you again?
Yes, I'll write to you once a year on my birthday.
In care of Lord Carnaby?
Uh-huh. In care of Lord Carnaby. And now, dear kid, good night. You must go now.
I'll go, Linda. Goodbye, my dearest.
Goodbye, my love. Goodbye. Take care of yourself, kid. Oh. Oh, God. I got
this. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to sing a little song I've been planning to sing for a long time, but something always seemed to prevent me. But tonight I'm going to sing it, and nothing could prevent me from singing You're All I Need from that famous picture Escapade starring William Powell. All right, Victor.
I used to dream of gold and glory, just like a lot of people do. But since you taught me love's old story, I only dream of you. You're all I need, my wonderful one. You're all I need, my starlight and star.
red light and what it means to your pocketbook.
A red light should be a reminder to use Super Shell gasoline. Because if you're not using a balanced gasoline, you're wasting money every time you stop for a red light. But you cut down this waste when you use Super Shell. It's the first truly balanced gasoline. That's why Super Shell goes farther, not only on long trips, but on the stop-and-go driving you do around town and in traffic. Switch to Super Shell tomorrow. Then every time you come to a red light, you'll know you're saving on gasoline. And your gasoline gauge will prove it. You don't have to fill up the tank so often when you use this balanced gasoline. You can get Super Shell anywhere from coast to coast at any of the 30,000 neighborly Shell stations.
I hope you like our show in Shell Chateau tonight, because we certainly like doing it for you. Well, you enjoyed the show. I know you'll enjoy next week even more. Next Saturday night at this time, we're going to bring you what I call a request show. We've had requests for a certain great dramatic star. We've had requests for certain outstanding comedians. We've had requests for certain charming singers, and we have them. So remember to be in Shell Chateau next Saturday night for our big request show. And don't forget, the next time you're out driving and need gas, drop in at your nearest Shell service station. This is Al Jolson saying from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Father.